Support for WPR comes from WIPS with Toward One Wisconsin, a conference on equity, diversity, and inclusion, May 7th and 8th in Eau Claire. Registration information and more is at t1w.org.
Good morning, I'm Jim Packard, in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network. Happy to have you along with us today for another edition of Garden Talk. Lawn and turf care are on the docket today. John Steyer, UW-Madison Associate Professor of Agriculture and Life Sciences, is an Extension Lawn and Turf Research Expert in the Department of Horticulture and is here with us in studio. John, pleasure to see you.
Thank you, Jim. Pleasure to be here again.
When we look outside, a beautiful day, you can certainly almost see the grass grow.
That's right. It is a gorgeous day after that little bit of rain that we had last night. The grass will really take off. We're supposed to have mild temperatures this weekend, cool nights. That'll really help the grass grow. We'll be mowing again sometime this weekend, I think.
If you'd like to ask a question or make a comment about your lawn or growing lawns, then give us a call in Madison, the number 263-1890, otherwise toll-free, 800-642-1234. Good-looking lawn requires the right lawn grasses for our area of the country. I doubt that one of them is a zoysia grass. You're getting questions, though, about zoysia.
That's right, Jim. I just got a question yesterday from a homeowner who had seen an ad for the amazing Amazoy grass, which is a zoysia grass. And the advertisement states that you don't have to mow it, you don't have to water it, you don't have to fertilize it. And she wanted to know if that's true. And the answer is unqualified yes. And that's because it's not growing most of the time in Wisconsin. It's a southern grass. It grows very well in places like Georgia and Florida and Alabama and so forth. It will survive up here in some situations, but it really doesn't grow very much. It's brown for almost the whole year because it's too cold. It really needs temperatures around 80 or 90 degrees.
And if it doesn't have that, it just stops?
And if it doesn't have that, it stops. And if the temperatures dip below about 50, 55 degrees, it turns brown. Well, with our nighttime temperatures still dipping into the 40s, it's still brown.
How does it survive the winter? Does it make it in those cases?
In some cases, it will survive the winter. It just goes dormant in September with the first cool nights. It starts to turn brown, and then it just survives by underground rhizomes throughout the winter, and then they send up new shoots again when the soil temperatures get up above 50 degrees Fahrenheit and the air temperatures get up in the 70s or 80s.
Well, let's talk about the grasses that you think do the best job in Wisconsin.
Well, the best grass in Wisconsin are our old standbys. Kentucky bluegrass is the number one lawn grass across all of the northern part of the country because it looks good. It has great winter survival, good drought tolerance. The leaves will die, but it will grow back from rhizomes. It fills in very nicely when areas are killed out because it can spread by rhizomes. And like I said, people like it. It looks fine. Other grasses are perennial ryegrass, which are always included for new establishments because they germinate very quickly and provide some quick cover, although they winter kill fairly easily. And the fine fescues we're promoting more and more, especially for low-maintenance turf areas. Those are the ones that we really don't have to mow very often. We don't have to fertilize very often. And we don't have to water very often. In fact, one of the trials that we've been doing, Jim, we've got some grasses that we planted that we've never, ever watered and never, ever fertilized. And in some cases, we don't ever mow them. And there's a few varieties of these fine fescues that do very, very well under those conditions. They don't provide as pristine of a lawn as the best house in the neighborhood will, but they provide a very decent choice for people who truly don't want to expend time or energy maintaining their lawn.
John Steyer is our guest. The lines are full. Let's go to Ron in Arena first. Hi, Ron. What's on your mind?
Hey, thanks for letting me talk. I got a lawn that's a year old. We seeded it last year with Madison Parks, and they also put some annual ryegrass in there to help get some quick cover. And this year, the lawn it's thin. There's like, I watered it. It's very sandy soil. I water it religiously. I have my own well with an irrigation system. So the grass clumps are about 2-3 inches apart in some areas. Should I just, you know, will they fill in on their own, or should I reseed those areas, or what do you recommend for that?
Well, it's difficult to really say if they're going to fill in or not. Anytime annual ryegrass is used, it automatically makes me cringe, because it has the capacity to actually block other grasses from germinating. And I normally don't ever recommend somebody planting annual ryegrass at the same time that they're going to plant other grasses. To me, it's a temporary cover crop to be replaced by desirable grasses when the people can get in there and actually seed what they want to seed. My guess is if you've got clumps of grass and there's large areas between them, your best bet will be to overseed. And if you've got a sandy soil, my recommendation would be to go buy some fine fescue seed and either rent a slit seeder or hire a landscaper to slit seed the grass in and get that filled in. Along the way, you'll want to put down some fertilizer and encourage the grasses that are still surviving there to actually fill in and spread to the best of their ability. But without the fertilizer and water, they're just not going to do that.
But the slit seeder would work real good with the finer fescues to fill it, you know, to just go through without disturbing the plants that are there then.
That's right. It'll shred some of the leaf tissue of the existing plants, but that's no big deal. You do that every time you mow it anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And the slit seeder works very much like a farmer's grain drill. It cuts furrows into the soil and drops the seed into the furrows.
Okay, is this something that you have to pull, or is it something you could push? Or?
They're usually motorized, so they'll come with their own engine. You'll put a little bit of fuel in there and turn the engine on, and they're self-propelled.
Oh, cool. Okay, well,
all right.
Thanks a lot.
All right, Ron, good luck to you. Thanks very much for your call. On we go to Oshkosh and Mark. And, Mark, what's on your mind today?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, I got a question. What's the difference between crabgrass and quack?
Oh, Mark, that's a great question. I get that periodically, and there's so many people who really should be asking that question, and they don't. Quackgrass comes up out of the ground very early in the year, and quackgrass is a perennial. That's one distinction. Crabgrass is an annual plant, so crabgrass has to establish itself from seed every year. Quackgrass grows very well under both cool and hot temperatures. Crabgrass is only here when it's hot.
Okay.
So the quackgrass has already been growing now for about 2.5 to 3 months. The crabgrass has probably not even germinated yet across most of the state, or if it has, it's just starting to germinate. In our crabgrass trials, we've not seen it come up yet, but the quackgrass has been up since April.
Pretty good yard of quackgrass going the way it sounds. Is there any way to get rid of it?
What color is it?
Green.
Well, quackgrass has kind of a more darkish green color. Crabgrass is very light colored, has very wide leaves, and there's hairs on the leaves. Quackgrass really doesn't have much hairs on the leaves. The plants tend to be spaced fairly wide apart, at least several inches apart, and they never form a carpet. Crabgrass, if you let it go, will form a very nice mat. And Jim's found a very nice website for quackgrass. Do you want to share that with them, Jim?
Sure. That's just a Google quackgrass, and it comes up. It's the Virginia Tech. I think it's the second listing on the page.
Okay.
With a picture of quackgrass in a pot. But a very good picture of the grasses. You could see the spreading, the particular individual leaves are wider apart than you'd find with the crabgrass.
Are the leaves a little wider than your typical lawn grass?
On quackgrass, they may or may not be wider than your typical lawn grass, depending on what you actually have planted in the lawn. One surefire way to help tell the difference between quackgrass and crabgrass, go out and pull it up. Grasp it right at the base and gently give it a tug, and the soil should be a little bit moist. And if it tugs out and it's got some nice roots on it, that's crabgrass. If nothing really comes up or you just have a few scraggly roots, that's probably quackgrass, because quackgrass spreads by rhizomes, which can be buried several feet deep in the soil, and they will not come up easily.
Okay, is there a way to rid your lawn of quackgrass?
Conventionally, no, not without spraying Roundup probably two or three times during the whole season, essentially having a dead lawn the whole year, and then every time the quack grass comes up from old rhizomes, spraying it again. There's a product that just got labeled this year for use by professionals. They didn't think the homeowner market was going to be enough to sustain the amount of money that it costs to get the product registered, but there's a product called Certainty, which is available to professionals, and our research with that shows that it can selectively remove quackgrass from Kentucky bluegrass lawns.
Really? So my lawn is, yeah, mainly probably Kentucky blue.
But you'd have to hire that out.
Sure, no, not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I know some people that do that. Actually, one more question for you, and this is going to be probably a little tougher. I have some, like, clumps of grass that are very, very dense. You know, you step on them, say you step on them, or, you know, feel them, it feels like a hump almost in the lawn, but they don't get real tall. They kind of flare out. You kind of know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You might, if you really want to know what that is, either ask your landscaper or take the sample into your county extension office, and they should be able to tell you what it is.
Oh, okay.
It might be a fine fescue, but I really don't know.
I was thinking maybe a tall fescue.
That could be, too. Somebody would have to look at it.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, Mark, thank you very much for your call. Our guest is John Steyer, an associate professor of agriculture and life sciences at the UW-Madison. If you'd like to join the conversation, we have a couple of lines open at 263-1890 in Madison or toll-free at 800-642-1234. Let's talk about fertilization. I read that you fertilize only when appropriate, otherwise the lawn is more susceptible to disease. And would that be in the spring or the fall?
That's a great point, Jim. For fertilization, turf grasses, lawns, for example, are growing year-round and they're permanent. They're perennial vegetation. So we have to treat them differently than a farmer, say, who's growing corn or soybeans, which is an annual crop, and they tend to fertilize all at once. We'll take that same amount of fertilizer, but we'll actually spoon-feed it and apply the fertilizer 3, 4, 5 times a year, mostly in the spring and the fall. Maybe some in the summer, depending on if it's a cool summer or a very hot summer. If it's 85, 90 degrees, our grasses really aren't going to be able to use the fertilizer very well anyways. If it's 60, 70, 75, 80 degrees in the summer, then we usually recommend a July fertilization. So to keep it simple, we tell people to use the holiday schedule. Memorial Day, July 4th, Labor Day, and Halloween. And with minor modifications, depending on where somebody is in the state. But those 4 dates are a good way to remember to fertilize a lawn periodically during the growing season.
So with Memorial Day coming up, then what advice or recommendations do you have for someone who's considering adding some fertilizer to their lawn?
At this point of time, knowing that Memorial Day is coming up, and we want to get the fertilizer watered in the soil, if we don't want to water it in, if we want to let Mother Nature do that for us, then we try to time the fertilization so that we apply it a day or two before a rain event is anticipated. So we had some rain last night, so anybody who fertilized this week would have been in good shape. So people should be aware of what their local weather conditions are going to be like and then fertilize shortly before that rainstorm.
And when they're looking at fertilizer, they're looking at 3 numbers. Those 3 numbers represent what?
That's right, Jim. Those 3 numbers on the fertilizer bag represent the amount of nitrogen, the amount of phosphorus is expressed as an oxide form. The actual amount of phosphorus is only half that number that's on that bag. And then the amount of potassium, NP and K we call it. So if a bag says 21-3-12, it's got 21% nitrogen in there. It actually has about 1.4% phosphorus, not 3%. And it has it will have about 10% potassium in there then, too, because it's not a straight potassium calculation either.
Okay. Our guest is John Steyer, UW-Madison Associate Professor of Agriculture and Life Sciences. And you're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Happy to have you with us on this Friday morning as we talk about lawn and turf care with John Steyer. The lines are full again, John, so let's go to Jerry in Franklin next. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning, gentlemen. I bought a new house last year, and my dogs are starting to leave stains on the grass. My understanding was that I could put lime on the actual yellow part of the grass, but I may have gotten that wrong. I think now it needs to go on the green part before it turns yellow.
Well, you know, you bring up a very good point. There's lots of information and misinformation out there. And what lime does is it raises the soil pH, which is okay if the soil pH is too low to grow a plant. But in this case, the urine from the dogs should really be having about a neutral pH unless the dog is very sick. And so what's really killing the grass is the salts that are in the urine of the dog. If you took fertilizer and you dumped a large load of fertilizer on the lawn and left it there, you would get the exact same symptoms that are caused by the dog's urine. So it's a salts problem in the urine, not a pH problem. You can spread all the lime you want. It's not going to necessarily help that. So the trick is to either train the dogs to go someplace else or to flush the area with lots of water with a hose or something like that after the dogs have urinated on it. But it needs to be done right away so that the salts get diluted in the soil and get flushed down below the root systems. Knowing that the root systems are about 6 inches deep, that's about how much water you're going to have to put on. Now, most soils will hold maybe 1 to 2 inches of water in that 6-inch root zone. So you'll have to put down about an inch or two of water in that spot to flush the salts down.
Okay. And how about the yellow stains that are already there? I need to regrow grass there?
That's right. You'll have to regrow the grass there. So you'll have to flush the salts down either with a hose or let rainfall do that and then put some new seed in there.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Okay. Sure, good luck to you, Jerry. Appreciate your call. The number in Madison is 263-1890 and otherwise toll free at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Nick next in Green Bay. Nick, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My backyard butts up against some woods, and in those woods there's a stream in there. And, like, if it rains or anything, like it did last night, it'll flood that area, and my grass is so wet that, I mean, it'll be, next week it'll still be wet. Mm-hmm. Even the dog, even my 60-pound dog, he won't go back there because he sinks. Is there any way to get that grass to dry up, or is it pretty much, and it's a big canopy over the grass, so you'd never get sun.
Yeah, there's really not any way that you'll probably practically or perhaps legally be able to get that area to dry out. You'd have to do probably one of two things. One would be to install drain tiles underneath the ground to drain that water away, and you may run into some legal restrictions doing that. The other thing to do, which you might be able to do legally, is build the area up with new soil and essentially create a dam back there or a dike so that the water doesn't come onto your property anymore. Those are pretty much about the only things that I think you're going to be able to do.
Okay, that'd be way hard because I guess that's woods and it's kind of a big bowl, so everything just sits in that bowl, but okay.
All right, Nick,
all right,
good luck to you.
Good luck.
Or relocate, I guess, is then
or
it comes down to that if it bothers you. Bob, let's go to Viroqua next. Hi, Bob.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, John. I want to give John's opinion on what I may have done wrong here. We came out of the winter. The lawn came up very lush and green. I did some overseeding, thatched, and then overseeded, right after the thaw, more or less. And then last weekend, as I walked out on the lawn, we'd had a, 3.5, weak dry spell, but we did some watering, not a lot, but some. And I noticed that the lawn in very large spots in the lawn where the grass turned orange. I mean, this wasn't dormant grass. Hmm. This appeared burnt. I mean, and I know that the sun beats on this particular part of the lawn. It is not in a shady area.
What's your soil type like?
Well, John, we live in Minnesota, so the soil isn't like here, you know, in the western part of Wisconsin where it's sandy, but it's, you know, rich farmland. So I never took a pH count or anything like that to find out what it was I was dealing with. The lawn is, by and large, gorgeous. But what I ended up doing, John, was raking, and I mean, I really had to get ornery with it to get it up. And I raked it out and down to the bare soil, and, you know, I'll sprinkle some seed in there again. But the lawn, by and large, is gorgeous. I was wondering what caused this orange burnout, though.
Well, you know, usually when people say they have an orange-looking lawn, it's usually a rust disease, but it's very early in the year to see rust. And I normally wouldn't expect to see any rust disease starting until July at the earliest. So it very well may be a situation where it just dried out and those leaves are dead. And probably as a function of the cool nights, the chlorophyll was lost and was not able to be regained. So you're seeing the anthocyanins in there, the same pigments that make the beautiful autumn colors on our tree leaves. My guess is that with time and water and maybe a little bit of fertilizer, those plants will grow new leaves and it'll be able to regain its healthy looking appearance.
Okay, John, real quick, and then I'm going to let you get on to other callers. What type of fertilizer at this? I think you may have addressed it earlier, and I wasn't quite paying attention, so I apologize. What type of fertilizer should I be looking at? We have Kentucky bluegrass. That's what I overseeded with about a month and a half ago. I don't know if the seedlings, you know, really took, but
yeah. Well, for lawns, the most important nutrient is nitrogen, and that'll be the first number on a fertilizer bag. Get a soil test taken, and if phosphorus and potassium are low, then you can add those using a bag of fertilizer that has higher amounts of phosphorus or potassium in them. But generally, that first number is what you're going to want to look at, and you probably want to put down about a pound of nitrogen per 1,000 square feet. So if the number in the bag is 25, the way to figure out how many pounds of fertilizer you need is to take 1 divided by the decimal of whatever that first number is. So if the first number on the bag is 25, you take 1 divided by 0.25, and you get 4. That means you need 4 pounds of fertilizer per 1,000 square feet. Many home lawns are around 10,000 square feet.
Right.
And that's why many bags of fertilizer are about 40 to 50 pounds.
Got it. Well, John, thank you so much for your analysis. I appreciate it.
Good luck with it.
Thanks, Bob. We appreciate hearing from you today. Helen's next in West Salem. Hi, Helen.
Hi. I was calling to tell that person that called in about the yellow spots on the lawn from the dog that he should talk to his vet, because there's something that can be given a dog that prevents that. So just that's all I wanted to say.
Okay, Helen, thanks very much. We appreciate your comment. Mike's next in Sheboygan. Hi, Mike.
Good morning, guys. The past 3 or 4 years, I've been having some issues with some type of mushroom taking over some areas of my lawn, and they're pretty invasive. But what causes that, and how do I get rid of that?
Mushrooms are a perennial problem for those that have them. Mushrooms are the fruiting bodies of a fungus that's living below the soil, sometimes several feet deep. So, unfortunately, it's very difficult to do anything about, because we can mow off those mushrooms, those fruiting bodies. That fungus is going to stay alive for decades, maybe centuries, below the soil. And whenever the conditions are right, usually moisture followed by, in some cases, a dry spell, or a dry spell followed by moisture, differs depending on the type of fungus, then it will send up those fruiting bodies. And it's trying to perpetuate its species. And those mushrooms have billions of spores underneath of them. If you were to take the cap off of a fresh mushroom and put it on a piece of paper, if it's a dark spore-forming mushroom, as that cap opens up, it will release the spores, and you'll have a beautiful imprint of dark-colored spores on a white paper. If it's a white or light-colored spore-forming mushroom, you have to use a dark-colored paper. But there really is nothing that you can do, per se, to remove that fungus. occasionally we'll find a fungus growing as it's chewing up a dead stump or a 2x4 or something else that was put in the lawn and left underneath. And if we dig that piece of wood up, then we remove the food source for the fungus and we have no more fungus. The problem is that there's organic matter scattered randomly throughout the soil. Usually it's very well mixed in. Most soils have organic matter ranging in from between 1.5% and 5% organic matter. And there's no way we're ever going to be able to remove that. Nor would we want to, because it provides nourishment for the grass as well as a number of other organisms. So I guess what I'm saying is learn to like them.
Oh, okay. I just thought it was so unusual because they're occurring in areas that get full sun all day, and the grass around it is still very lush and very green and healthy. See, like everything else. But
you know, the fungus is living underground. It doesn't really care if it's in the shade or in the sun.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Mike, good luck to you. Thanks very much. Our number in Madison, 263-1890. Otherwise, toll-free at 800-642-1234 as we talk with John Steyer about lawn and turf care. And on we go to Dodgeville and Julie next. Hi, Julie.
Good morning, fellas. My question is, as one gets older, you don't want to have a real bumpy lawn, right? So do you have to just bite the bullet and have the whole thing leveled off by landscapers and what do you call that, you know, that you put on it, the big
rollers?
Yes. And do that, or can you address it in little sections where you could build it up or cut it off a little or what?
I think you're right on track there. I agree with you about the bumpy lawn. As lawns age, oftentimes they get more and more bumpy for various reasons. If you want to correct the bumpy lawn, the trick is to figure out why it's getting bumpy. Rolling oftentimes doesn't do it, depending on why it's getting bumpy or not. But probably the best thing to do is in those areas where it's bumpy, add a little bit of soil to the low-lying areas. You can add enough soil to cover up no more than half of the leaf blade. As long as you leave half the leaf blade above the soil level, the grass will be able to grow up through that soil. And then you wait several weeks or a couple months, and then you add a little bit more soil to that area. And over time, you can build that up. This is how golf courses keep their putting greens tabletop smooth, but they're putting down very small amounts of soil every 10 to 30 days every year. And for homeowners, it just gets too expensive to do that, and we don't have the right equipment. But in those areas that are bumpy, we can do it with a shovel. And that's probably the best way to do it. For larger areas, or if you don't want to wait, a person could dig up the area. Not necessarily dig up the area, but take a spade, a shovel if you will, and cut three sides through the sod, and then lift that sod up with a lever. Don't do it with your hands. You'll injure your tendons. And then fill in from below if you want to get it done real quick. But otherwise, what you're talking about, the top dressing method is the way to go.
It sounds like a good plan. Thank mm-hmm. you.
All right, Julie, thank you very much for your call. We had an emailer inquire about spreading ashes from their wood stove on the lawn, whether that's a good idea, bad idea, or if it is, how much?
Well, that's a good question. I've never been asked that question before, Jim, and that's amazing because by now I sometimes think I've heard most of them. The ashes will provide especially nutrients like potash or potassium, and that's where we get the term potash because the pioneers used to leach their ashes with water and they would collect the residue from that, and that would contain the potassium. And then they would use that as a nutrient. So it could be done. I don't know of any legal reasons that it couldn't be done. So I think it would probably be okay. I wouldn't put it all in one place. I'd scatter it about.
Okay. And back we go to the phones and to John in Port Wing. Hi, John.
Yes, good morning. I guess I've got two questions, two specific questions. One is, what variety of lawn grass would you suggest for our area, or for my area, which is my lawn is particularly difficult on what I like to call red brickyard clay. And the other question is how to seed whatever into a soil surface like that without replacing the whole lawn, kind of an overseeding process.
Where do you live?
Port Wing up on Lake Superior Shores.
Okay. So you need something that's going to be very cold tolerant, and that's going to be our Kentucky bluegrass. And granted, it doesn't like real clay soils. It likes to be able to root deep. But with proper management, it'll be able to survive very well there. The way to get it in the ground is to rent a slit seeder or hire a landscaper to slit seed the Kentucky bluegrass into the ground. And then periodically, spring and or fall of the year, either rent a core aerator or hire a landscaper to core aerate the lawn. That'll punch holes in the lawn, and that will provide some oxygen and some space for the roots to grow. And that will help deal with the potential soil compaction from the clay.
In lieu of a slit feeder, are there any other suggestions? I'm rather skeptical about the availability of a slit feeder as a rental in that area.
Okay. The other option is to get some soil and scatter the grass seed on the bare ground, or if you need to, lightly till it up or rake it up so that it scarifies the soil a little bit. Put the seed on the soil and then cover it up with about a quarter inch of soil. And if it's a large area, put a little bit of straw mulch on.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for the advice.
All right, John. Good luck to you. Thanks very much. We appreciate hearing from you. On Garden Talk, Ron in Reedsburg is next. Hi, Ron.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
John, we are on rural land, and we have a pond. And the previous owner had pretty much neglected the embankment around the pond. There is a section that is a nice lawn, but most of it has been neglected. And as my wife likes to put it, every nasty thing that nature has to offer grew up there. The prickly ash and various kinds of berry bushes and sumac and that kind of thing. And we have picked away at that and gotten rid of most of that, at least on the main part of the embankment. And now the question is, we are looking for something to grow there, because what is coming up right now, of course, is the first-generation opportunist, which are also pretty nasty things in most cases. But we're looking for some type of grass that would be, I guess, what you'd call low maintenance. I mean, we don't intend to mow it a lot, so something that would be hardy but yet would grow to just a certain length and then just kind of hold its place, and something that would be dense enough to crowd out the things that we don't want to grow there.
Yeah.
I wonder if you have a suggestion.
Well, I think you could go ahead and plant some fine fescues there. They'll grow to about, depending on the actual variety and species of fine fescues, and usually you'll buy a mixture of them anyways, depending on whatever the seed producer can get their hands on. They'll grow to about a 10 to 18 inch height. And you can essentially leave them unmowed. It's recommended to try to mow them at least maybe once a year in the spring, because if we don't mow them ever, eventually we still get some things coming in like Canada thistle, which is a noxious weed and has to be controlled according to state laws, or we'll get small bushes or even small trees growing up through it over time. But that'll be your best option, is get a mixture of fine fescues and put that in there.
Okay, second part of that question then would be that what is left there to plant in is, there's a lot of rootstocks from stuff we cut off.
Right.
And also, it's a fairly, somewhat rocky area. They're, sporadically mixed around. So I don't know that it's an area that we could have disc or anything like that. We'd probably have to do a Roundup type of treatment. And then, but I'm not sure how to get the seed started after that, because I don't know there's any mechanism that can get in through that ground.
Well, I'm imagining that this must have a slope to it.
Slope on part of it, and of course the top of the embankment's fairly flat, but a lot of it is sloped.
Okay, so, probably I'm guessing that you want to do this one time.
Yeah, amen.
And have it work out. Especially since there's a slope there, and given the nature of the situation, your best bet will be to broadcast the seed by hand or with a handheld spreader or something like that on as bare of an area as you can get it. Expose as much of the soil base as you can. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Spread the seed on there and then get a biodegradable mulch cover on there. They sell biodegradable mulch blankets, if you will, one brand name, and there's several of them out there. I'm allowed to give brand names,
sure,
right, Jim?
Sure.
It's Futerra blanket, F-U-T-E-R-R-A. It's a very, very thin, lightweight wood mulch blanket, if you will, less than an eighth of an inch thick, and it will biodegrade. But that will hold the seed in place even during some pretty heavy rainstorms. It will hold the soil in place, and the seed will grow up through it. So you really don't even have to put the seed much into the soil. As long as it's on top of the soil, it'll work.
Okay. And again, the name of that stuff was?
Futerra blanket.
Okay.
You can look it up on the internet, or you might be able to get it through a local seed distributor.
Oh, okay.
Or garden center, ask for it.
Okay.
All right, Ron.
Some excellent advice.
Good. Thanks very much. We appreciate your call.
We certainly try.
And Dick in Lake Villa, let's give you a chance to stump the expert.
Yes, I have a creeping bent lawn, and last summer I couldn't keep up with a drought.
You have a creeping bent grass
yeah.
lawn?
Well, I used to work as a greenskeeper, so I'm kind of nuts anyway. And last summer I couldn't keep up with the watering. Even though I live on a channel, I can pump out of that channel. I just couldn't put enough water down. And a lot of the bent died, and crabgrass came up.
Yep.
So this year, and when the forsythia bloomed, I put the preventer and killer, it said, on the bag. I never had this problem with the golf course.
You put a what on it?
A crabgrass killer. It's a killer and preventer.
Okay.
It's a pre-emergent job.
Okay.
And it doesn't look to me like it killed any of the crabgrass. It might have killed the seed.
Are you getting crabgass up already?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Where are you?
South of Antioch.
Oh, okay. You must have some very warm soils. Our crabgrass isn't up yet.
We've had 85 and 90 degree temperatures down here. So.
Yeah, well, we were still in the 30s this past weekend at
night.
Well,
that depends which day you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, that's unfortunate that it didn't work.
Is there a killer for crabgrass?
Well, MSMA is probably still sold this year retail for homeowners. It'll be a post-emergent crabgrass killer. If you can find something with quinclorac in it as an active ingredient, that's a very good post-emergent crabgrass killer. Quinclorac.
Quinclorac.
Oh. I know that's in the professional market. It's sold as Q4 for the professional market.
Say that again.
Q4. Yeah,
okay.
Just
maybe
the letter Q and a 4 after it. I don't know if it's available for the homeowner market yet or not, but that's going to replace MSMA, and it's a better product.
Yeah, I can probably get some through the golf
course. I am not 100% sure of its safety on bent grass.
Yeah, that's the problem.
But if you can live with a little bit of injury, and my guess is since you're not selling rounds there anymore, it'll grow out of it.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks very much, Dick. We appreciate your call. Our guest on Garden Talk is John Steyer. He's an Extension Lawn and Turf Research Expert in the Department of Horticulture and an Associate Professor of Ag and Life Sciences at the UW-Madison. Our telephone number in Madison is 263-1890, otherwise toll-free at 800-642-1234. And you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 12 noon. I'm Jim Packard on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today as we talk about lawn and turf care. We'll check with the latest news and see what's going on in the world, and then we will continue to take your calls. And so we will hear from Elaine and Judy and Diane, and we'll hear from you as well if you call in with your question in Madison at 263-1890, otherwise toll-free at 1-800-642-1234.
334. So far in the hour, we found out about the right lawn grasses for our area of the country, when to fertilize, when to mow, or how often, and the kind of mowing height that you need. We've talked a little bit about fertilizing. So other questions are, how much moisture do most lawn grasses require through the growing season? And will mowing at different angles on consecutive cuttings help spread out wear and compaction? Those questions after the news. Hello, I'm Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today as we talk about lawn and turf care with John Steyer, UW-Madison Associate Professor of Agriculture and Life Sciences. He's an Extension Lawn and Turf Research Expert in the Department of Horticulture. John, pleasure to have you with us today. Thanks very much for being here.
Thank you, Jim. Always a pleasure.
In Madison, the number is 263-1890, and otherwise we're toll-free at 800-642-1234. Before the news, I said that I would ask you a couple of questions, and one of them is, how do you tell if the lawn is getting too little water?
You know, if the lawn is getting too little water, the best way to tell is to put on some polarized sunglasses, and if the grass is looking, is starting to look blotchy, that's a sure, because grass doesn't dry out uniformly. There's always some areas that dry out faster than others. That's a great way to tell. Take the glasses off, and you'll see those dry spots are a little bit more bluish-green rather than green, and oftentimes the leaves are a little bit thinner than where the grasses have access to more water.
The other question I had was, will mowing at different angles on consecutive cuttings help spread out wear and compaction?
Yeah, we oftentimes like to see people mow in different directions, not so much from a wear and compaction issue, because foot traffic, just by walking and even the riding mowers, don't provide that much compaction per se. It's the athletic field, jumping and running, that really starts to compact the soil. Simply walking on it, we don't put enough pressure on it to really compact it. But we do like to see different mowing angles used so that the grass is constantly forced to grow in a different direction, and it helps keep the grass upright. Otherwise, if we mow in the same direction all the time, we get what's called grain, and that's where the grass kind of lays down and starts growing in one direction. And the leaves can get very long and essentially bury other grasses, and we actually end up then with a less dense grass system, which whenever we do mow the other way, all of a sudden we have a thin turf and we have more weeds coming up.
Makes sense. And after 25 years of mowing in the same direction, I probably ought to change my approach.
That's right. And you know, if people really, really want to have a nice looking mowed lawn, there's a book out called Picture Perfect, written by one of our native sons, almost, if you will, David Meller, who used to be the assistant groundskeeper at Milwaukee County Stadium. And it instructs homeowners how to mow their lawns to get different patterns and so forth. If you watch the Boston Red Sox nowadays, he'll have tremendously beautiful patterns mowed on the infield.
He's the lawn keeper there.
That's right.
All right. Let's go to the phones to Diane in Tilden next. Hi, Diane.
Hi. I have a question on bugleweed. My whole yard is just getting covered with it. I guess the name of it is really ajuga. I think people call it creeping Charlie.
No, that's something different.
Something different? Okay. Well, according to the book and looking at the pictures, this is ajuga.
Okay.
And it's covering the whole lawn. It used to be just little patches here and there, but this spring my lawn just kind of turned out purple.
Must be. Is it coming from the woods?
No.
Or from an ornamental planting?
Well, we didn't plant it.
Okay. I've never seen it in a lawn before, but I believe you that it's there.
Okay. It used to be farmland around here.
Okay.
So part of the lawn happened to be actually what they used to plow. But it has actually gotten closer to the house now, and it's actually in my front lawn.
Yep. Well, since I've never seen it lawn before, I don't have any experience with any data or anything on how to remove it, but you might try a conventional broadleaf herbicide to take it out.
Okay, we did use a brand that we got at Fleet Farm. We used a Superior brand this year, and it seemed like it basically fed it rather than kill it.
When did you apply it?
I'd say about a month ago.
Yeah. I'd say try again in the fall. Was this a liquid application?
No.
Oh, yeah. Waste your time with the weed and feed products on this.
Okay.
On this one, you're going to have to go at it with a liquid application.
Okay.
And a spray application, because they get so much more material actually into the weed that they by and large do a much better job. There's a few weed and feeds out there that do a great job, but it really depends on the formulation of the product. And there's so many different brand names out there, it's impossible to tell somebody what one to go at, because the brand names can change year after year.
Okay, so would you recommend it now with the cooler days that we're supposed to have?
Yeah, you could go at it with a liquid application at this time of year and see how well that does for
okay.
you.
Okay, I've never seen a liquid. Do you have a couple of brand names that I might
Big box stores and garden centers both will sell liquid herbicides.
Okay.
Both in concentrates and in ready-to-use formulations.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Great. Thank you so much.
All right, Diane. Thank you very much for your call. Number in Madison is 263-1890 and otherwise toll-free at 800-642-1234. Judy's next in Madison. Judy, you're on the air.
Yes, John. We have a very nice lawn, I think, and we tried to follow all the rules. But I noticed that in late summer, we started to get circles of dead grass.
Ah.
And so I suspected grubs. But my question was, once you see the dead spots, the grubs are already done with their work, right? I mean, you can't put grub killer on the circles then and expect to kill them. Do you? And what kind of grub killer do you use? Is there one kind of a grub killer that kills all grubs, or do you have to find out what kind of grubs they are? And what about these Japanese beetle infestants? Don't they go into the ground?
Boy, you ask great questions. These are all very good questions. Let me back up, though, and ask you, were the dead spots circles?
Right.
If there were circles, it's probably not grubs. Grubs don't normally kill grass in a circle. It's kind of a random dead areas that don't really have any well-defined shape.
Uh-huh.
If it's circles, how big were the circles?
Oh, say about as big as a huge frying pan.
Yeah, okay. So to me, that sounds something like necrotic ring spot, which is a fungus disease that rots the roots. And the fungus loves cool, wet conditions, so it probably rotted the roots that spring. And the grass did okay. It still had a few roots, and it could stay green until it started getting dry.
Uh-huh.
And then when the soil got dry, the grass died out.
Oh.
And that's probably what's going on.
Oh.
There's not a whole lot that can be done about it in an existing lawn. The disease will go away after a few years.
Uh-huh.
It may get worse for a year or two or three, and then it tends to disappear after a few years.
Uh-huh.
There are some resistant Kentucky bluegrasses that can be planted.
Uh-huh.
Also, perennial ryegrass is resistant to it. And so in the past, a lot of homeowners have just gone out and gotten perennial ryegrass because it germinates fast, and they'll put it in the hole.
Uh-huh.
And now they have grass. But perennial ryegrass may be a different color than Kentucky bluegrass, and it grows faster than Kentucky bluegrass in the spring.
Oh,
so then
yeah.
People think they got weeds. Well, mm-hmm. They don't. It just grows differently at a different rate in the spring. So those are some options.
So there isn't any fungus killer you can put down.
There's products that are labeled for it, Judy, but...
Mm-hmm.
I would not be doing my civic job as a citizen if I told you they were very effective.
Mm-hmm.
Because the fungus is down in the soil,
uh-huh.
and the fungicides move upwards in the plant, not downwards in the plant. And
okay.
we don't get very good efficacy with the fungicides.
Uh-huh. And now, am I expected to see these in different spots, or are they always going to come up in the same spot?
Both.
Both.
Some of them we'll see in the same spots, but you'll see new spots develop as well. Because what happens, that fungus disease, the fungus hitches a ride on roots and rhizomes as they grow through the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And then it erupts into another little epidemic.
Now, how can you tell the difference between if this is a fungus or if it's grubs?
Dig it up. If it's grub damage, you should be able to peel back the lawn like a carpet.
Oh.
And you'll see the grubs. I mean, you'll actually see the grubs on the soil surface. They're white grubs, sometimes with a brown head, and mm-hmm. they'll curl up into a C. They'll form a C.
Yeah.
A C shape. And there's lots of them if it's grubs.
Oh, okay.
If you can't peel back the sod like a carpet, it's not grubs.
Okay.
From a pathology standpoint, we operate a fee-based turf diagnostic lab at the university, and people send or bring in samples there, and we'll look at the roots under a microscope to see the fungus.
Uh-huh.
There's different types of fungi. Not all of them cause root rots, but we can identify which ones are causing root rots and which ones aren't.
Uh-huh, I see. But if it's a fungus, then, and it kills it in the late summer, and it's coming back, though, in the spring.
That's right.
So it's not really killing it.
That's right.
I see. Okay.
It's not necessarily killing the grass completely.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But it's really, really hurting it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, Judy.
Okay, thank you very
much.
Good
luck to you. Thanks very much for the call. And Elaine, let's give you a chance in Hartford. Go ahead.
Hi. How does one kill off Creeping Charlie and stop its invasion?
Well, Creeping Charlie, the best way to really kill it with the minimum amount of time and effort is to apply a broadleaf herbicide to it in the fall and then again in the spring when it's in flower. Seeing as how we're already in the spring, an application could be made when it puts out flowers now, and then a second one in the fall. And that should usually do it.
Okay.
And as Larry said,
use a liquid herbicide, though. Don't use the granular weeding feeds.
Okay.
We can't get enough herbicide into the weeds, into Creeping Charlie, to kill it.
Okay.
And as Larry Mueller said on this show last week, you can do an awful lot of damage to Creeping Charlie in about a half an hour on your hands and knees. So I don't know whether or not...
That's right. You can do that. The trick is getting the stolons out. Because people, unless they're pulling very carefully, the stolons are left behind and the Creeping Charlie will be back in a month or two.
Right.
Otherwise,
right.
Larry's right.
Okay. All right. Thank
okay,
you.
Okay. Elaine, good luck to you. Thanks very much. And on to Bill in Wausau. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Say, I've got a problem with quackgrass, and I know that the only way to get rid of it is to kill it with Roundup. But my question is, if I seed and keep seeding, will the new grass crowd out that quackgrass?
Well, reseeding can help, but proper mowing, fertilizing, and watering will do an awful lot of good to helping thicken up a turf to help crowd out more quackgrass, although it probably won't eliminate an existing quackgrass problem. There is a new product out this year called Certainty that professionals have access to, and that can, our research is showing that can remove quackgrass without killing the Kentucky bluegrass.
What's the name of that product again?
Certainty.
Certainty?
As in, I'm certain it's going to work.
Oh. So in other words, I should go to a professional lawn service like Kim Lawn or something like that.
That's right. You know, and it's so new that many of them don't know it's out there yet.
Oh, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
You say Certainteed. Is that C-E-R-T-A-I-N-E-E-D? Is that how you spell that?
C-E-R-T-A-I-N-T-Y.
T-Y. Okay, I'm sorry.
It's all right.
Thank you very much.
All right, Bill,
good luck.
Good luck to you. Thanks very much for your call. Time for a few more, and we have a couple of lines open in case you have a question about your lawn. 263-1890 in Madison or
toll-free at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Russ in Arpin. Hi, Russ. You're on the air.
Hi. I was wondering, my lawn is, I got a more acidic soil, and it's heavier clays. And I was wondering, would it help to lime the lawn at all?
Do you know what the pH is?
Not exactly. I'd say it's around, 5.2 to 5.8, maybe, right around there.
Okay. So if you're trying to grow Kentucky bluegrass or perennial ryegrass, it's a little bit lower than what we'd like to see. We'd like to see those numbers up around 6, 6.5 to 7.5 for Kentucky bluegrass and perennial ryegrass.
Okay.
Bent grasses and fine fescues will grow very well at that pH.
Okay.
So lime will help, although lime works very, very, very slowly.
Right.
Years before you'll be likely to see much of a pH increase.
Okay.
But it will help.
Okay. What about weeds? Do weeds do better at higher pH, or is it, all weeds?
Because weeds are all different. Red sorrel, for example, is a weed, and it would love those types of pHs.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
So you can't make a blanket generalization about weeds.
Cannot make a and that's why, Jim, they're weeds, because they grow no matter what.
No matter what your efforts are to combat them.
No matter what your effort. That's why they're weeds.
They will be back. Jackie in Milwaukee is next. Hi, Jackie.
Hi. At least in the backyard, never cared much about whether the lawn was perfect. But I'm going to have it redone because of a problem with something that we have. And the landscaper looked at me kind of strange. I want to have white clover put in with the Kentucky blue that they're going to put in this section.
Yep.
My idea is, because it's going to be green and because it might help some of the bee problems.
You're trying to attract bees.
You're trying to attract bees.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're about 60 years too late, because up until about the 1950s, the Scotts Company actually sold its lawn mixtures with clover and sometimes violet.
I have clover seed.
Yeah.
And they're going to put it in there.
That's fine. Oftentimes, the clover seed, did they give you the inoculum?
Yes, I have that.
Okay.
I read all my stuff, yes.
Okay. So put that in there and don't fertilize it.
Okay.
We've had a tremendously hard time, actually, establishing grasses with clovers for whatever reason. We've tried them all. We've tried tall fescue, fine fescue, bent grasses, rye grasses, blue grasses, red clovers, white clovers. We've had a very hard time getting
fertilized in the backyard at all, and I had clover.
Yeah.
And that's why the man says, you mean you don't want lawn like that? And I said, no, I want clover with it.
Right. So, I wish you the best luck with it. To me, it's not outlandish to do. But, everybody has a different idea of what a lawn should look like.
But you mean the idea is not to try and fertilize it.
Right.
Because it wouldn't help the clover.
Right.
Okay.
That rhizobium bacterium that you're going to inoculate the clover seed with,
yes,
that will form an association with the clover. It'll form little nodules on the roots, and that will be able to fix nitrogen from the air.
Yeah, I got it from
If you
Jung
fertilize it, it actually gives the grass benefit.
I got it from Jung Seed, and
yep,
they told me how to use it, so
okay,
I'm going to do it that way.
Okay. Good. Well, Jackie, good luck to you, and thanks very much. I'm sure we'll get a report on how it's turning out. Barbara is in Appleton and is on the air. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question. I've got an older lawn. I'm not fussy about it. I don't use any chemicals on it, and I cut it with an old-fashioned reel more.
Mm-hmm.
More.
Mm-hmm.
And there are sections of it where the grass just kind of folds over, so I have difficulty. I never can quite cut it decently, and then it gets almost like a thatch underneath. What could cause just parts of my grass to fold over like that?
Are you mowing in the same direction all the time?
No, what I do generally, I mow it one way, and then I'll go perpendicular the other way, just to
okay,
make sure that I get all of
yep
it. But I do that just about every time that I...
Well, I don't know why it's folding over like that, unless it's an off-type grass species, which just has very limp blades. You might just try raking it the other way before you mow, kind of folding it back over on his back.
Yeah, I try that, and that does help. But there's nothing that could be causing that that you're aware of.
No, normally the grasses have to be pretty long to flop over.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this lady before, I have another question about the clover.
Mm-hmm.
I have clover in my lawn, and I, you know, kind of like it, and I figured it was good, so I let it go. But there are areas now where it's taking over. It's nothing but clover.
Yep.
So is there anything I can do about that?
Fertilize it. And whatever grass is there will be able to compete better, and you might end up with a more equal distribution of clover and grasses then.
Oh, okay. I use a corn gluten to fertilize it. Will that, you know, help? Cause I,
yeah,
I
like it's got the nitrogen in there.
Yeah. Okay. So by fertilizing the what's there, you figure it'll help.
It'll help the grass, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks very much.
Okay. Thank you very much. And in terms of grasses bending over like that, if your mower blades are not sharp, can that have an effect on how those blades end up? Or is that just probably not?
Jim, that's a great point. You know, if the blades aren't sharp on that reel, or if the reel is not perfectly aligned with the bed knife, it's not going to be cutting them, and maybe the mower needs to be checked out. That's one of the reasons that we don't see homeowners using reel mowers very much anymore, because they're very finicky. They take a fair amount of maintenance to keep those blades sharp and to make sure that there's always just the right amount of contact between the reel and the bed knife, because you hit a stick or a rock, it can put out a whack real quick. That's
a great
point.
Especially if she's headed for a while,
might
be that way. All right, let's go to Scott in Madison next. Hi, Scott.
Hi there. Hey, I got a question about my soil on my grass. It tends to really harden up, and I was wondering if I plugged it and then added sand, would that kind of keep it loose?
You get about 30 seconds for the sand.
No, it won't. If anything, backfill it with a very well degraded compost.
Compost. Okay. So after I plug it.
Yes.
Okay.
And after he mows, would you recommend bagging or not bagging?
I don't like to see bagging. Let the lawn clippings decompose back into the turf.
John, thanks very much. We'll look forward to seeing you again
in the near future.
John Steyer, UW-Madison Associate Professor of Agriculture and Life Sciences, and Extension Lawn and Turf Research Expert in the Department of Horticulture. You can get a CD of the program if you call the radio store at 1-800-747-7444. You're asking for program 525F, as in Friday. I'm Jim Packard. Thanks to Keisha Mabra for on-air phone production today. Coming up on Monday, Birds of Wisconsin and Those Passing Through with Bill Volker to the DNR and Noel Cutright of the Wisconsin Society for Ornithology. Thanks for listening.